Welcome back to The Bonfire, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts. I am your host, Mike Bon, and today on the show, we are going to do a bit of a UFC 309 debrief with two of my favorite fellow media members, Mr. Jose Youngs of MMAfighting.com and Oscar Willis of The Mac Life. All three of us were on the ground in New York City to witness the return and potential career finale of Jon Jones, who defeated Stipe Miocic by third round TKO due to a spinning back kick to the body to defend the heavyweight title for the first time. Did this win make him the number one pound for pound fighter in the world? The UFC's rankings say no. Dana White is quite upset about this. Will he unify the titles with Tom Aspinall? Will he just simply retire from the sport? And this was the last we've seen of him. All of those options seem in play. Jose, Oscar, and I will discuss all of that, plus the futures of Charles Oliveira and Michael Chandler after their co-main event fight of the night. A little UFC Macau talk ahead of this weekend's return, and a little bit more on top of that as well. So please make sure to like, subscribe, follow, comment, or any other show of support you can make for the program. It all means a lot in helping us grow things here. We'll take a quick break, and I'll be right back with Oscar and Jose. Enjoy the show. A familiar face in Oscar Willis from The Mac Life. He's been here now three times in eight episodes, Oscar. And Jose Youngs from MMA Fighting for the very first time. We were all just in New York for UFC 309. There was some crazy, wild, unexpected stuff. But do we start with the Darren Till, Tommy Fury press conference or no?
I think we start with the fact I want to address that I just shaved half my beard and then the thing ran out and then I had to do this. So that's I want to acknowledge that this is not the style. And yeah, we can start with Tommy Fury. First of all, I want to say it was great seeing you guys in New York. You know, yeah. I think it's really important that there are people there on the ground, you know, smelling the sights, seeing everything. I think it just adds value to the whole coverage. So I was glad that we were all there to do that and be there in 5 weeks and stuff. The Tommy Fury case, Tommy Fury Darren Till thing, very funny.
That was one of the funniest sentences I've heard in a very long time, because I didn't watch it live. We had people on MMA Fighting covering it, and I read the caption, and I could just read it in Darren Till's like accent. It was spectacular.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes leading up to fight night. I think Darren Till's got some work to do in the gym before we get there, if you saw those shadow boxing videos. Jose, what was your most memorable moment when you think of UFC 309 Fight Week? What's the first thing you would say to ask you?
In terms of my own personal, you know, I enjoyed when Jon Jones walked into media day, looked at me and said, well, you can't be the only one with a cool jacket, and then left and came back with the jacket on. That was quite funny. In terms of the actual event, I mean, I didn't really get to watch any of the fights because it just seemed like it was just so many knockouts in the prelims. Like when the fights were happening, we were interviewing people. So I could not tell you my favorite experience from watching the fight, but I guess Jim Miller's post-fight press conference was a lot of fun. Did oddly good numbers for us.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, it's a home game for you, so it doesn't really feel like you know, a big trip or anything. What about you, Oscar? You stayed an extra day in New York too, right? You just wanted to be there so bad?
Yeah, I just loved it. You couldn't handle enough. But it was I actually woke up really fucked Sunday. I don't know why, if it's just getting old, because obviously we went to bed. I went to bed around 6. And then I eventually just called the lobby and was like, I'm not leaving. So just charge me another day or whatever you have to do, but I'm not getting out. And then just fell back asleep. And then woke up around 2, but I was really, really tired. I was thinking I was going to sleep on the plane, but I didn't get to. Instead, I got to read my seat neighbor ordering a prostitute on his iPad, which I really enjoyed. I thought, wow, this guy is not even waiting till he gets to the hotel. He's ready. And so I got a kick out of that. And the event itself, I thought that it was a little slow. Obviously, I think when Chandler and Oliveira fought, everyone was sort of like, well, please save the day here, guys. And then they obviously did. But if that fight had somehow been a stinker, then I think it would have been a pretty poor event, really.
Yeah.
I actually didn't hate the main event as much as other people did, but it wasn't like a barn burner. It was just domination.
Yeah, I thought it was fine. Honestly, you guys were in the media room. I was cage side. Like, I haven't rewatched it on the broadcast or anything, but I thought being there, like, it played out okay. I thought Stipe actually looked better from where my seat was than maybe I'm hearing a lot of people who are watching it from home or on television or anything, but definitely wasn't the same version of himself. And I'm kind of glad now he saved the retirement speech for a written version, which was probably better off for him, right? I think he got his point across a little more on that side of it. But here we are on the Tuesday, and on Monday night we saw a very upset Dana White post the first updated version of the new UFC pound for pound rankings, and lo and behold, Jon Jones still not number one pound for pound in the world. Islam Makhachev got that spot. He jumped Alex Pereira from 3 to 2. Are you, none of us, to be known for the viewers, are on the UFC rankings panel, so we have the right to, I guess, criticize. But anyone surprised by this?
I'm surprised, but I did ask. I did ask a couple of people, like, so, because I can sort of see Alex. I don't know why Islam would still be there. If we're talking about activity, he fought in June against Dustin, and I don't really know if that makes you pound for pound number one at the moment, because I base it on activity. But I do wonder if maybe there's just a couple of those guys on the panel who at this point are just fucking with Dana. You know, I think it was like a couple of them didn't have him at number one. And I wonder if maybe they see Dana shitting on them. So they're like, well, fuck you. He's not going to number one. It seems like, I don't know. The easy play would have been to put John at number one, I feel. So I'm surprised he wasn't. Don't know if you'd say he's necessarily been jibbed or anything, but I think it's a bit of a surprise.
Well, what do you think, Jose? Because I saw MMA Fighting release its pound for pound rankings too, and Jones is 8.
Yeah. I do not. I want to preface this that I don't vote on the MMA Fighting panels too. I think there was a gentleman that I'm, to those in the know, I can assure you they know the answer to this. He did not even have John Jones on his pound for pound list. And he's very adamant.
That
he,
right?
Yeah, he's okay. He's down, he's down in Atlanta. Yeah, he's all right. Thanks for asking. So I have nothing to say about MMA Fightings. I disagreed with it. I had John 2. I still have Islam 1 and Alex 3. John, just based off his body of work on his career, but like Oscar said, activity, I don't have a problem if you want to put Alex or Islam 1-2. It's really 1A, 1B to me. We had a vote for Ilya, which I thought was very interesting, and the person that voted for him argued, you know, knocking out Volkanovski and Holloway back-to-back is maybe the best back-to-back fights and performances in UFC, maybe MMA history. So I don't have a problem with that. I personally have Islam number one just for how easy he made it against Charles, and that war against Dustin, and that those two fights against Volkanovski were just so impressive to me.
Oscar, what is the case to have Islam Makhachev number one if you had to make it?
Based on my employer, I'd say there isn't a case. actually, did you see Ali and Don Cruz getting into it?
That was real weird.
I was enjoying that. Real weird. I think, I don't know, the pound for pound thing. I know, remember the old, the famous Chael thing, that it's all a bit of a weird conversation anyway. I think pound for pound is something that can just change depending on who fought last.
Yeah.
Right. So, like Jose said, after Ilya knocked out Max, sort of like, would you really be against him going to number one after he just beat two of the best ever, regardless of weight class? No, I wouldn't really mind that. Pereira is obviously on this insane tear where he's just won 2 titles in 2 divisions. He's got up. He's now allegedly fighting bigger guys, which is always like important in pound-for-pound rankings. I think that's kind of the argument against Islam when he beat Volk. Obviously, Volk's great, but Islam's the bigger guy. So it's all a load of waffle, really. But as far as Jones, I sort of didn't have John on my pound-for-pound list for a while just because of the sheer inactivity. Mm-hmm. And then, like, if you have him there, then people can't jump above him, sort of thing. But now, after his performance, because like you, I didn't think Stipe looked that bad. I got, like, he looked slow. And if you go watch his old fights comparatively, yeah, obviously very slow. But he also got tripped and beaten the shit out of him in the first round. And I think can't really ignore that. So I was very impressed. I was quite impressed with John's performance. I thought he looked good here, as he's looked compared to his last 3 fights at light heavyweight. Mm-hmm. So I would have John near the top for sure. But it's, again, it's all been like who's done what lately.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I still think Islam has a good case right over there on the top of my head there. But he's, I mean, the Volkanovski win's just so valuable in my mind. I mean, what he did, especially in that first fight, I know it was a close fight, but still, like, I thought he won it. We were all there together in, where was that, Perth when that happened?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, he's had the great run. Poirier, I think, was on the pound for pound list, like, you know, somewhere between 12 and 15 when he beat him. And now, like, you know, we'll get into Jones versus Aspinall if that happens. But say he does get the Pereira fight and he beats him, what's Dana White's argument to move him up? If you're discrediting Islam's place by saying he beat Volkanovski, who's a weight class lower,
I also just think in terms of fight quality, the Dustin fight and the first Alex Volkanovski fight for Islam are better than any of Alex's fights, and then very clearly better than Cyril Gane and Steve.
Yeah, yeah. But also, then you just come back to Ilya. I just think Ilya, like, smashed.
Well, yeah.
Obviously, yeah, the Volk thing, the asterisk, but Max had a great fight, and Ilya still knocked him the fuck out. No one has ever done that to Max. So it's like, well, then Ilya should be at the top, you know? That's where it gets complicated in a bit.
Yeah. I think the moral of the story is, I think of the two we're talking about, Islam and John, we can all agree that Ilya needs to be in the conversation with Alex as well. Yeah. It's like a top 4.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess it depends on your definition of pound for pound too, right? Because John, out of that group of like four we mentioned there, John and Alex Pereira are the only ones who have that two division success at this point. So I think
that's John also suffers from how easy he beat Cyril. If that had been a dogfight, people wouldn't look at Cyril like they do now. Let's be fair. Like, he's obviously gone down a lot in people's estimations. Mm-hmm. Before that fight, I think he was favorite on some betting lines. And then John made it look so easy. I actually think that does harm John's case, because it's like, oh, well, he was meant to beat him. He can't wrestle. So, well, we didn't know that until John proved it, you know? So I think maybe John actually suffers a bit from that win rather than gains from it.
Yeah, I think what John suffers from the most is just the time off between fights, right? Like, at the end of the day, it's still two fights in about 5 years at this point. So especially by the time, if he does fight again, everyone else is being more active and, you know, beating people that are on these pound for pound lists. Technically, Stipe Miocic wasn't even ranked when John Jones beat him.
I did out of curiosity. So I went on after Dana posted that AI thing, I did go on ChatGPT and I put in, like, considering these like list of factors, including body of work, win-loss record of opponent, win-loss opponent's rankings and stuff like that. Considering all these, who's pound for pound? And it was still Volkanovski, then Islam, and then Holloway or something. I was like, okay. So I think even Aljamain was ranked above John. So Dane's obviously going to sign up to that real quick. But I think it was just like, So I love that Zuckerberg suddenly being like, please save us, Zuck. You'll sort it out, as if AI is this flawless thing that will... It's all opinion-based. It's all half about is completely opinion-based, which makes... I feel like we're Kevin Ioli Dana now, but it's just like, it's a bit of a non-starter, the whole pound-for-pound thing, especially with AI, I feel.
Yeah. Do you, Oscar, I know you're there in Vegas, you talk to UFC people, why is Dana so fixated on this thing? Like, you know, I know he wants John to be there, it makes him easier to promote and stuff, but you think Dana White has a million things going on, more so than to worry about how the pound-for-pound rankings shake out each week?
I don't know, mate. I think sometimes Dana just gets, like you said, fixated on the next flavor. The next, let's have it right. Dana loves being a bit combative. Like, he gets, that's when he's sort of performed at his best. He feels like he enjoys combating with stuff, whether it's the media, politics, the Democrats. Like, he just enjoys combating against stuff. And I think maybe this is just the thing he sort of locked, seen that he doesn't like, and is now like, I have to solve this. And this is his next combat episode. Other real reason to it, other than, like, I also think when he said it and people argued against it, it reinforces his opinion, and so he wants to push on, and then it gets more and more exaggerated in his mind.
I respect the passion, at least. I mean, you can, there's been periods with Dana White where you can sense his enthusiasm as a promoter has waned and things like that, and you can't really deny it when it comes to this subject. So I appreciate that, at least. It's it makes it more entertaining and gives us things to talk about like this here on the show, right, Jose?
Sure. And I also, like Oscar said, if everyone agreed with him that John was number one, he would probably find another thing to argue that how John should be number two. It's just how it works. It's like, remember he was real fixated on streaming and all of a sudden that just disappeared. Yeah. So it's I don't know. It's just Dana being Dana at this point. Like, and I asked him, remember in Newark, we were all there. I asked him, like, where does Islam rank among lightweights? Not pound for pound, lightweights. And then he tangented onto how John is the greatest pound for pound. Like, it's just how it works. It's the same thing when I asked him about Shogun after he lost to Ovince St. Preux in Phoenix. And then he goes, thank you for asking that. And why is Anderson Silva mad at me? Like, it's just how it is with Dana.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of combat sports, right? Is that, like, you know, the old traditional barbershop conversations. Oh, well, this guy would have beat that guy and stuff. This is just the latest version of that.
Yeah, I mean, if you were to all put them into like a three-way tie for first right now, and you look at the next fights, I mean, who do you think establishes a number one spot the most? John Jones, say he beats Cyril, or Tom Aspinall, say that's the fight. Islam beating Armin Sarukian, or John. Alex Pereira defeating Magomed Ankalaev.
John, if John beats Tom Aspinall, he's number one.
But then again, it's sort of, if you're looking internally in the division, you would say, oh no, you're probably right. But then, like, if Alex beats Magomed, that's a pretty big win for Alex, right? Sure. But I think Tom's quite good. And I think John's age and stuff like that. If John were to beat Tom, we'll get onto this.
It would also depend on how they do it. If Alex goes out there and melts Ankalaev in a minute,
If he melts Ankalaev in a minute and Ankalaev didn't shoot a takedown, aren't you just a bit like, what a fucking idiot that guy is?
That doesn't really help him. that definitely hurts the standing. So yeah, let's get into it. We were all there, as I said, off the top on Saturday. You guys asked John Jones the questions. We asked Dana the questions in the media room. We, you know, all the clips have been kind of spread around. Dana not interested in Pereira particularly. Jones wants Pereira, but we'll take the fuck you money to fight Tom Aspinall. I don't know what that price tag actually is, but since then, you know, John hasn't disappeared the way Dana said he was going to. He's out there tweeting, putting a duck in his profile picture and stuff. Has your guys' thoughts on whether we get Tom, you know, did an interview as well. He's posted some stuff on his YouTube channel. Has your thoughts on whether we're getting this fight changed since we left the media room on Saturday?
I don't know, because it all, I think all signs are pointing to the right way, but they can point the right way for a long time. And then John, the conversation start and they realize John's somewhere else. You know, I'm sure, like, I know that Dana said to Tom, it's the fight we're going to make. We'll pay him, stuff like that. But I'm sure in their mind, they're like, fuck you money probably means like 12 million. And then they'll get in a room with John and John says 45 million. And then it's like, what the fuck do you do then? So, I think it's all trending the right way. I'm sure the UFC wants it, right? It just makes all the sense in the world. They kind of get one more out of John, potentially anoint their next big star at heavyweight. Makes all the sense in the world. I'm sure they're going to try and make it. It's all just down to John, which it has been the whole time. You know, John's the one. John actually, and he noted it multiple times, and he's saying all the right things, how he's ready to walk away. What a way his last fight would have been in front of Trump, being a Christian American and stuff like that. He's saying all the right things to make them feel obligated to pay him the money. Just depends how those, how they, it's about his ego as well, right? Will he, yeah. he said, sorry for rambling on, but he said, oh, they have to pay me enough money so it doesn't matter if I lose, which I thought was very telling for John, because we know how much he really cares about not losing. It depends if that amount of money that they do offer outweighs the fact that he really does not like being called a duck. You know, this kind of, it's going to be a weird middle balance for him to find. And who can predict John Jones?
What do you think, Jose?
I think Tom's next fight will not be against John, but I do think it'll be for the undisputed title. And I think if Tom does what he has been doing, another quick first round finish, I bet John comes back. Yeah. To fight. I think he needs to see one more, like, oh wow, that was very impressive that you did that to Cyril. That if Tom beats Cyril Gane faster than John did, that would be the play. It's like, that's what, when Cody Garbrandt knocked out, because Dominic Cruz beats Kei Mizugaki in like a minute and 30 seconds. And then Cody Garbrandt did it in like a minute, 1 second. And Cody Garbrandt's like, I just beat him faster than you. Face me now. And then that was the seed that was planted. The next fight for Tom won't be John, but within the next two, I'm not confident, but I could absolutely see a world where John's ego makes him come back to try to reclaim the title from Tom Aspinall.
What happens in that scenario you just laid out, Jose, if Alexander Volkov beats Cyril Gane next month at UFC 310? Then what do they do?
I mean, just run
Pereira.
It back. Yeah,
then you tell Pereira to
it would be
Pereira very loses to Ankalaev too.
Yeah, sports over, if we fucking go cover baseball or whatever.
I would love nothing more if there's a world where Tom fights Alex Pereira before John fights Alex Pereira. I think that would be very funny, and I love chaos. So I don't know. We'll see how it happens after December.
Yeah, Oscar, you're gonna add something.
Yeah, I think he's right. I believe they will tell Tom that don't fight anyone else. Like, we're going to get this across the line. Mm-hmm. And then I think we'll all know by March if it's going to happen or not, right? Because I do believe the UFC will reach a point where, and I think Tom will reach a point where they're like, we're not doing this again, right? Remember how last time it took years to get him to get a deal? I don't think they'll do it again. I think they will just say, in fact, it would, based on the last few months, what a weird turnaround it would be. But it wouldn't be that out of the realms of possibility to be like, yeah, he just doesn't want to fight Tom Aspinall, you know? We really put it, and then Dana just switches on him and stuff. So I think Tom's will be against John. I think it'll probably happen middle of the year. But yeah, I don't know.
Tom did say in that interview with Ariel Helwani on Monday that he specifically told Hunter Campbell and Dana, like, I don't want to be in a Michael Chandler situation where I'm just sitting and waiting months for uncertainty. And apparently they assured him that that wouldn't be the case. I don't know. The confidence just seems all there from like everyone except for John. If Dana he came to that press conference and I kind of clipped together every time, I think it was three or four times he said in that press conference, this is going to be the biggest heavyweight fight in UFC history. And then the final time he said it might be the biggest fight they've ever done, which, you know, I'm I saw Conor McGregor say slow down on that clip. It's hard to imagine anything that fight encapsulating Conor versus Khabib Nurmagomedov, but for heavyweights, I think it would certainly be up there. But it almost feels like Dana's kind of painting himself into a corner a little bit. Like, it's going to be a bad look if they can't get this done, and we do end up with Tom Aspinall versus Ciryl Gane or Volkov for, you know, the undisputed heavyweight title.
It's the same thing when Francis beat Stipe, and then all, remember he said, you know, if I'm John Jones, I really look at middleweight. So
yeah,
it's just rinse and repeat.
All times have changed.
He's basically saying it's going to be done though. So pressure's on. I think if they lose I think they know they don't want the egg on their face two times in this division. You know, we're already sitting here saying, you know, Francis Ngannou could be the real, like, he's the lineal heavyweight champion. And then if John leaves, it just makes the whole situation even messier. You don't want this happening twice over in your heavyweight division.
Just the division as a whole, like, we had DC versus Stipe three times in three, like, once a year for 3 years. And then we had, you know, Francis fought Ciryl Gane, left, vacated the belt. John wins it, sits out for like 16 months. And then Tom is the interim champion and defends it. The UFC heavyweight championship has been hot potato nonsense.
And it's been like this for years too. It was the case when it was Cain Velasquez and Junior Dos Santos and Antonio Bigfoot Silva. Like, I'd have to look back. I wonder
Stipe's run.
It's been like 10 different people who have fought for the heavyweight title in like the past 10 years or so. It's crazy. There hasn't been much overlap.
And
I thought the bit that was the moment, because I thought the fight was Tom and John was not going to happen, and then it was when we were in Abu Dhabi at Power Slap. And Dana was shitting on PFL and stuff. But then he suddenly said, after not showing much of an interest in it, he suddenly said, oh, the fight everyone wants to see is John Jones, Tom Aspinall. And I think, as you said, like, they don't want to do this twice. I can see a world where they overpay John in their mind. They overpay him to sort of shit on Francis. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? To sort of belittle whatever Francis is doing, whatever it comes from. Like, we've made this... this is the undeniable real heavyweight, blah, blah, blah. I can see that sort of playing into it, but it's also a massive fight. John and Tom, because of everything John has done, if it was a master plan, he's done it amazingly. It's one of the biggest fights they could do.
It's very similar to when Francis was trying to get the first Tyson Fury fight, and then all of a sudden Dana's like, we're going to make John versus Tyson Fury. Just out of nowhere. And it was like, you don't want that fight. You just hate Francis.
Yeah, totally true. So your gut says, Oscar, it happens by halfway of next year, and Jose, you don't think it happens?
By end of year next year, I think it is. If it does happen by end of year, I don't think it'll happen by the summer, though.
But you think Tom fights one more first?
Probably.
Interesting. Probably. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, with everything that's being said, I just hope they pay John. You know, it could be an overpay, but, you know, even if you're overpaying for that loss, the value you make up on the back end of it with Tom being the champion and having that win, how promotable he could be. And you can't sit there and tout John Jones the way Dana has been for the past year and a half and then, you know, not pay him. So just make it happen and say this is a one-time deal for the greatest fighter ever, and other fighters don't expect that to be the new bar of what a UFC payday is.
Yeah, plus it's also back pay because he was underpaid for years, and it's also, you're basically guaranteed a rematch if Tom wins. So you sort of, you know what I mean? Like, it's just
very true.
And the trilogy after that, if he wins the rematch, there's a lot of
John would fucking sink straight off into the sunset. Maybe, I don't know, but it's worth it. It's worth it for them to do it.
I hope for sure. All right, let's move on from this. I think the only really other fight worth talking about at UFC 309 was the co-main event. Charles Oliveira beating Michael Chandler. A 5-round unanimous decision. Gets a little scare there at the end, but a big win for Charles. I thought he looked great in there, especially knowing he came in with an injury. Good job asking about that at the press conference, Oscar. And it's been a good rebound for him. But what do you guys think? Do you think, like, he was talking about pre-fight, this Max Holloway rematch for the BMF belt, and then obviously this was touted as a title eliminator. We haven't got the official announcement of the fight between Islam Makhachev and Armin Sarukhan, but we're expecting that to happen UFC 311 January 18th in Inglewood, which the event they've announced, not the fight, but I'm expecting that to come soon. If you're Charles, do you chase that title shot or do you chase the Max Holloway fight?
I think the fact that Dana said they're happy to fly Charles to be there for that fight shows that they're ready to make that rematch, you know? So I think if you're Charles, the BMF belt does not require you to be winning at that level to fight for it, right? So I think it's better for Charles to go for the title shot while he's on a run and get a rematch against either of those guys. I think that just makes sense. And I actually thought that Charles looked, apart from the fifth round, unreal. Charles looked the best I'd seen him. I thought that was one of Charles' best performances. Mm-hmm. Something can take down an opponent with good wrestling, was really, really composed, was never really, again, fifth round, and Till was never really in trouble at all, was taking shots. Well, that was the best Charles looked. It certainly, I still think the result is the same, but it certainly gave me more confidence about him going into a rematch with those two guys than I had previously. So I think if you're Charles, I'd love to see him go for the title again.
Yeah, you agree with that. Yeah. What if Armin Tsarukyan wins, though? Do you think they do the trilogy immediately with Islam Makhachev?
It would depend on when, because it would really depend on when and how tough that fight would be, I guess, because, you know, obviously Islam can't fight for a big chunk of the year because of Ramadan. And I know he's always wanted to fight in Madison Square Garden. Armin's always wanted to fight in Madison Square Garden. It would make a lot of sense to do the trilogy maybe at MSG next November. And if that's the case, Michael Chandler can fight for the fifth time at Madison Square Garden against Max Holloway. Against Max Holloway. And just make that the co-main event. And the winner can fight. It's a whole thing. I don't know.
You think, Oscar, they'd want to do that rematch? I mean, they clearly love Islam. He's got, you look at his numbers, his social media followings, like, he is one of the top three biggest draws slash stars in the company, in my opinion. So he feels like the type of guy they would want to give a rematch to.
I can see that. And certainly, obviously, I know where he wants to fight, but obviously they want him in Abu Dhabi. Certainly, I could see a rematch with Islam trying to reclaim a title in Abu Dhabi would be massive for the fans there and obviously the regime there. So I could see them trying to push for that. But then again, I'm sure they're doing a Brazil show and maybe Charles trying to get the title back in Brazil. So maybe what they do is they make Armin turn around real quick mid-year and then do the third, you know, see how it goes. But probably, as Jose said, it probably depends on the fight itself.
Yeah. What do you do with Max Holloway then, if not Charles?
Chandler.
See, I don't think Max will want to fight Chandler right now.
I guess
Max just lost, but
yeah. I guess if it's International Fight Week in July, though, I guess who else would he fight? Like, he'd do the Gaethje fight, he could do the Hooker fight, though those guys might fight each other. You could do the Dustin, the third fight against Dustin.
Max, it's either Dustin, Gaethje, Hooker, or Chandler, right? The same names that are always in those crazy fights. Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Any one of those works, you know what I mean?
You don't think this loss kind of bumped Chandler out of the conversation with those guys? Or do you feel, I know Dana like gave all the praise and he loves him, he called him his Arturo Gatti and stuff, but at some point the results of the fights need to kind of speak for themselves, or so you get one more to make up for the Conor McGregor weight, one more big high profile fight.
Again, if it's for the BMF, the win loss doesn't really matter. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Name was the BMF.
I would imagine they pay Michael Chandler a lot of money, so they would want to put him in these high profile fights to
Can we also just address, by the way, I want to say this with all due respect, that the fight with Charles was like Michael Chandler's like perfect encapsulation. Dirty shit the whole fight, which I thought was hilarious. I loved it because I find it so funny that he's like outside the cage, like, hey guys, come on. And then inside he's like nailing him to the back of the head, rocks him, has him out on his feet, and then whiffs the hardest right hand you've ever seen to take himself off. It's fantastic. Chandler is a fucking, like, the win-loss thing. He's almost the only guy I know to the nth degree that the win-loss thing doesn't matter. Like, if Michael Chandler's fighting, you watch Michael Chandler fight.
Yeah.
It's just like every time it's brilliant. And so far, the backpack stuff is perfect, dude. I love watching Michael Chandler fight.
Yeah, and Jose, you mentioned, you know, the BMF and Nate Diaz and stuff, though. But, like, as far as I can see, no one who has ever beaten a BMF title fight entered it off a loss. It's always been guys coming off wins, and Chandler's on two losses. So, like, and they've always done something, you know, good that kind of felt like it was leading into that. For Chandler, it would almost feel like a favor or something.
Tell you what you could do. Chandler Paddy in London.
Oh, my God.
I think it was that you said that one.
I mean, I think that's wouldn't be the worst idea either. I think that would be a fun fight.
Outside of Hooker, though, everyone in that group are coming off losses. But also, no one would complain about any of those guys fighting for the BMF title, because the BMF title is just to fill a gap when they don't have a title to begin with to headline a pay-per-view.
I bet they do, Max Dustin. I bet they do those two again.
They could, yeah.
I don't know if my heart can handle that one, boys. I almost dropped dead the first or the second time.
I selfishly want the trilogy fight with Gaethje for Poirier in the Smoothie King Arena in New Orleans. I would obviously not hate the Max trilogy, but the Gaethje one, I think, just makes more sense.
Where do you think the Conor fight lays for Chandler, Oscar? Friggin' Dana saying that he might not be back till late 25 now. Chandler could maybe fight twice before then. Like, he obviously, this was a tough loss. I don't know what happened. I keep seeing that clip going around of him, Charles, like, front kicking him in the knee, and he like kind of collapsed. I don't know what round that was in, so I don't know what his damage is after that. Obviously, he didn't come to the press conference, and I haven't seen a statement, at least as of recording
this.
He was
limping. He did an interview with Megan, and he was limping, and she mentioned that he was limping. So I guess it did hurt, obviously.
But... yeah, so maybe he's messed up. But in theory, he could fight once or twice. Or do you maybe, like, if it is the back end, which you would think maybe they do somewhere between September and December, do you wait another year? I don't think you can, right?
Yeah, and I don't know. I think it's also everything could change three times over before then. You know, in the UFC, things like can change. Late minute dropout, some guy steps in. I think who Conor would want to fight could change three times in between now and then. I know that he's always said he wants to sort that thing with Chandler. And certainly, if you're looking at the layoff Conor has had, and then you look at Michael Chandler and that performance, you'd be like, probably a good one to come back for. You know, like to get back in there. So it would make sense, just you can't predict the weather.
Yeah. Honestly, if Chandler fights any of the names we mentioned, Max, even like Paddy, whatever, and he loses, I don't think that puts him in any worse of a spot to get the Conor fight than it does right now. Like, we saw Cerrone fight him off four losses and getting TKO'd by Gaethje in like 2 minutes. So it's all in play, I feel like.
Yeah.
Facts. Yeah. 100%.
The rules don't apply to that situation. No,
I agree.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, before we get out of here, this weekend, I think they're UFC Macau. I think there's as many fights worth talking about on that card as there probably is 309, which is like two. But I want to ask first, Jose, like, we see this trip back to Macau. They do Singapore once every while. They do road to the UFC. Like, is UFC going to be anything more in Asia than it is right now?
I mean... now that one championship and their 12 trillion eyeballs that they always tout are free, are probably going to be freed up. Maybe, I don't know, but I guess they don't really have a guy that can push in Asia. They don't have a champion. They don't have, they do, but she doesn't have fights, but she also just doesn't, she's not active at all. Like Whaley is one of the most exciting fighters to watch, but she fights once a year, maybe on these big events, you know, obviously Boston, UFC 300, she's fought at MSG, she's fought in Jacksonville, but then she just disappears. And, you know, everyone thought, oh, she might get the Valentina fight, but now Valentina and Manon Farrow are just talking all kinds of shit on Twitter. So that's probably going to happen. And then Tatiana Suarez is hurt. Vernon Jandiroba might fight. So you would assume they would want their champion to fight in China, and that's just not happening. So it's just, until she's more active, I just kind of forget that she's a champion. So, but I don't know. They should go back to Japan at some point, whether it's a pay-per-view or not, I'm not sure.
I think it's just a bit of a catch 22 because while they, when they don't go there, the interest in that region lowers, which means when they do go there, they can't sell the tickets at a premium or get a site fee. So while they can't get that site fee and they can get it from somewhere else, they're going to go somewhere else. So it's a bit of a catch 22 where they're perpetuating their own success in that market. So yeah, and also they only have like, while I wish they would stop doing so many events, they only have so many weekends a year to do events in, and they're getting more and more site fees and more places in the US domestically that's worth them to go to. So I think it therefore just pushes Asia and that market down.
And
as Europe is starting to come up, Australia's back in the mix, you know, so it's just kind of, you know, they want to go everywhere now that they're out of COVID, guys. But
maybe they'll use, like, obviously it's still in its infancy in terms of cards, but like this road to the UFC that they keep trying to do, like if they get a couple winners that rattle off, you know, 3-4 fights, and they get a Jamal Hill or a Sean O'Malley type fighter that can string together a win streak, maybe they could headline a fight night with them, especially, you know, after winning a prestigious tournament of Asian fighters. Don't know, but we'll see.
Yeah, no, I think, Oscar, what you said, and the criticism of the UFC, like you said, the event schedule has its limitations, and the last thing I want them to do is add another 10 fight cards a year so they can go to Asia like 3 or 4 more times, but that's why I asked, like, is this just kind of the reality for the Asian market, no matter what they want to do? Maybe, to your point about Japan, Jose, like, maybe Kai Asakura changes things in a couple weeks.
That's a very good point.
But still, like, that's... it's not like they're going to be doing every Kai Asakura fight in Japan if he wins the belt. Like, they still want to.
Keep if Manel Kopp and Kai Asakura both win trilogy in Japan, I am there for it.
Yeah, no, that could be fun for sure. It's just interesting. The Whaley thing is weird, man. Like, I know there was some talk when Bilal was falling out of 310. Like, they were considering adding her to that card. The Tatiana versus Verna fight got pulled apart. Tatiana said she was not hurt. and kind of stood behind that, but that fight wasn't put together. So I'm not really sure what the hell is going on with that division. It's a bit of a crapshoot. And, you know, you got Yan Xiaonan over there in China fighting in the co-main event against Tabitha Ricci. And I thought at one point that doing her versus Weili in China would be an absolute
that was the goal, right? That was the big
goal. We didn't get it either. But as far as the main event on that card, a banger, right? Piotr Jan versus Davidson Figueiredo. They had their first face-off on Tuesday. That was a good little clip. Piotr Jan whispered something in his ear. I don't know what it was, but Figueiredo apparently found it funny. Jose, do you think this is a title eliminator? If we do get Umar and Marab, Sean O'Malley's out there, where do you think the winner of this fight fits?
I mean, if the winner of this probably has a better argument to get a title shot than anyone, right? You know, they've been like, especially Davidson, he's been on a tear since if Davidson wins, he should fight for the title, especially when Marab wants it, but it's probably not gonna happen. We all know that because Marab seems to really want to fight Sean O'Malley again, and the UFC really wants to save Umar for Marab, especially if they go to Newark. You would imagine they try to make Umar, Marab, and Newark, considering they both have semi ties there. Figueiredo, I know they want to go to Brazil for a fight night sometime in the summer or spring. Figueiredo would make a lot of sense to headline that. And if he wins that, then it's a no brainer if he should fight for the title. But no, they should, but it won't happen.
Yeah. I agree. I think Figueiredo's probably got a better case for it now than he
absolutely. Might, you know? Absolutely.
For whatever reason, I don't know why, you just sometimes can sort of read it, feel it in the air. They don't seem that high on Figueiredo. Like after he wins, you don't hear like a push for him to get up the rankings. So even as a former champion, you know, usually these guys come like a Pereira. He lost Izzy, moved up one fight, he's right in there, and you don't get the sense they want that Figueiredo. So I'm curious, but I think the X factor is O'Malley, right? That's the X factor. So you could sort of have a list of who should get it. Although Dana has been pretty hard on Umar. So I think Umar will get it. I guess maybe it's the winner of this gets it after, depending on O'Malley's injury.
Yeah, it's right there for sure. I think Jan, I'm not so sure about. I think he's maybe got slightly lesser of the case, but Figueiredo has looked great. And yeah, I don't know why either, Oscar, that they aren't pushing him as hard. I mean, I think he seemed like a pretty easy champion to work with when he was at 125. I think twice in 21 days headlining pay-per-views. And
I think the issue would be UFC, his last fight, Figueiredo, was all the way in Abu Dhabi, so probably a lot of people didn't watch it at that weird time. And then he was buried to the first fight of the night at UFC 300 and beat Cody Garbrandt. And then who did he beat before that? I think it was Rob Font in Austin or something like that. And that's when Armin Sarukian and Jalen Turner just melted their opponents in the main event. So he just, again, he gets buried by other exciting things happening. Well, on the card.
At least this fight is going to have all the exposure. It's had a great time.
Exactly. As I say that, it's the same thing. He's going to go out there and knock out Piotr Jan in 40 seconds and no one's going to watch it.
Yeah, I mean, here in Canada, this is a Fight Pass exclusive. It's not even on television. So I think they make like seven cards a year that way. So yeah, I get the beauty of working the MMA Junkie shift for that one, though. I got a nice 3 a.m. to 11 a.m. shift. That'll be so much
fun.
I think the only other fight worth talking about on there, and I only bring this up, Carlos Alberg versus Volkan Ozdemir, because a few weeks ago on this podcast, I had Anthony Smith on, and he made this whole argument about how the winner of this could potentially steal Magomed Ankalaev's title shot if he wins. And, you know, we seem to think they want that. Dana said they want it, but it's not announced. We don't have a date or location. And there is, Oscar, I'll throw this one to you, there's this association with Carlos Alberg and Israel Adesanya, teammates, and I can't imagine the UFC would love anything more than having Alberg fight Pereira and have Izzy sitting there in the front row. That seems like, you know, a great promotional idea for them.
I mean, also, and I'm not speaking this into existence, but let's say Carlos knocked out Volkan Ozdemir in a minute. Mm-hmm. There's no main event for Sydney, which is a week after Israel fights. Lovely little combination for a Pereira-Ulberg main event in Sydney.
Yeah, no, right. I think it's right there. I don't think it's impossible. I mean, Anthony made this case, and I thought it was a bit goofy at the time, but considering Ankalaev didn't blow the doors off in his last fight against Rakic, there does seem to be a little bit of an opening, especially if anything gets difficult with negotiations or timing or anything.
Mate. He gets what he's asked. He gets what he's told. He's not getting to ask for a cent more.
Jose, you think there's any possibility? What about the person actually Anthony Smith did say was more likely of the two was Volkan Ozdemir, which I didn't fully get because I don't know where the tie is, but he's like, you know, he's had a couple good wins. If he finishes it quickly, like even if he's not next, he might be next after next if he wins here.
If he wins another two, then yeah, absolutely. But I think what Carlos Alberg's won six in a row, seven in a row, and I only think one of them has been by decision. He's been, and every fight is a slightly more difficult task. This is obviously his first former title challenger. I just think both of them are one win away. Ankalaev, what is that stat you always throw out? Like, he has like the longest unbeaten streak to someone that hasn't, like,
of someone who's never fought for a title. 13. Yeah. Well, technically, he did fight for the title in there too, but
it was a draw.
And it was a draw. So he did get that, but he has the longest winning streak in light heavyweight history or undefeated
after
streak.
After John. So, like, yeah, it's, I would say 1%. And the only factor would be like if visa issues with Ankalaev getting places. I think that would be the biggest factor.
Yeah, definitely. Anything else to add there, Oscar? Or any of these road to UFC finals you're just really looking forward to out there in Macau?
I mean, how can you pick? They're just all, I can't wait.
Yeah, Zai Pin fell off the card, so I don't know. I'm not interested anymore, but nevertheless, I appreciate you guys coming on here and chatting a little UFC 309.
I need to fix my fucking Oscar. Shit.
Go shave your face properly. Jose, good seeing you, man. Appreciate you joining the Bonfire for the first time. We'll take a quick break, and I'll be back to wrap things up. And that does it for another episode of the Bonfire. Thanks again to Jose and Oscar for joining the show. Had a lot of fun chatting with those two of my very good friends in the industry, so it was great to have them on together, and I hope you all enjoyed that collision of the superpowers of MMA media. Not often you get a MMA junkie Mac Life and MMA fighting collab, but that's what we bring you here on this very show. We'll be back next week for a little post-mortem on UFC Macau. It's an off week for the UFC PFL championship going on in Saudi Arabia. We will have another show for you and hopefully a special guest on top of that. So thank you all for joining the show. Thank you all for watching, and we'll see you next time.